God surpassed penetrating
and perfect truth.
You seldom met with.
Even 100,000 myriad kalpas.
Now we can see and hear it.
We can remember and accept it.
I vow to make the Buddha's truth a one with myself.
Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. The name Avalokiteshvara apparently means he who hears the cries of the world. He who hears the cries of the world. Yesterday I spoke of Avalokiteshvara and Amitabha Buddha as being symbols. The word symbol is not the best word. There is a problem with words in general in religion, and very often for the deeper concepts, there actually aren't words that fit very well. This is one of the places where words don't fit very well. I think the word personification is a better word than symbol. So Avalokiteshvara is and has been for Buddhists in the millions, tens of millions, even hundreds of millions for some 2,000 years, the personification of cosmic compassion. And I like that word better than the word symbol. Symbol is a more kind of lifeless term. Think of, you know, mathematics. You use symbols in mathematics. Well, it's not quite like that, is it? The personification of cosmic compassion. And Amitabha Buddha is another personification of cosmic compassion. Kishigarbha or Jizo Bodhisattva is another one. In the Christianity, Jesus and Mary, and so on. In 1993, which is just a little over 30 years ago now, I experienced one of these little spontaneous retreats that I've had a number of these in my life as a monk. And for a couple months, I just was in retreat here. Well, during that time, I experienced the merit of a previous life of a person who was a Buddhist, might have been a monk, might have been a layperson. I have seen a glimpse of one past life as a monk, but just a glimpse. But I don't know that it was that particular one that I experienced the merit of in 1993, but really quite out of the blue, I experienced very, very powerful, very pure devotional feelings for Avalokiteshvara and Amitabha Buddha. The classic kind of Pure Land Buddhist or Shin Buddhist kind of devotional feelings. And when I'm talking about devotional feelings, I mean a really deep, really pure love. Just a welling up of love for Avalokiteshvara and Amitabha. And I had experienced love for the eternal, and since then I've experienced love for the eternal. I've been very blessed in that way. You say the love of God, love for the eternal. Sometimes it focuses on my master who represents the eternal for me still, even long after her death. But mostly for many years, it's been just love for the eternal. But at this time in 1993, it was very much focused on Avalokiteshvara and on Amitabha. And at the same time, they were very clearly understood to be personifications of cosmic compassion. And this is, looking back on it, it's very clearly the experiencing of a merit from a past life. Since that time, I've not had the same kind of powerful feelings so focused on Avalokiteshvara and Amitabha Buddha. It just lasted for a period of a month, 5 weeks, something like that. It was a lovely, lovely experience. completely innocent, very pure, very quiet and still, and imbued with a profound contentment, sense of peace. Really one of the loveliest periods of my life. So when I speak of Avalokiteshvara as being a symbol or personification of something, please don't think that I'm in any way looking down on those who take things more literally than I do. By no means. I would say that I have had very personal experience of what may very well have been someone who took things very literally. And what does it matter? What does it matter? What matters is that there is sincerity, sincere faith, purity of heart, and a sincere practice of Buddhism, the very core of which is the practice of the precepts. You're not going to experience that kind of merit from a past life unless that person was practicing the precepts very seriously. You can't separate that kind of love from the practice of the precepts. Well, why is that? Well, just think about it. Those precepts are about not doing harm to oneself and to others. In other words, compassion. So many people long for wisdom and do not realize that you cannot get to wisdom without going through the doorway of compassion in some way. You have to go through the doorway of compassion to proceed onwards to wisdom. People who try to go around compassion end up with a kind of shell of wisdom, but they can do very wicked deeds, and that wisdom is not true wisdom. It can have the appearance of wisdom, but it's actually not wisdom at all. Let me read a little bit more of the scripture today. Where I left off was, when people hear his name and see his form and think of him not vainly in their hearts, all forms of ill in all the world shall cease. Now the scripture goes on to discuss some particular kinds of situations that we would all very much like to avoid, but sometimes we can't avoid them. It says, if wishing harm an enemy should try to push another in a fiery pit, the victim should on Kandayan's great power think, and straightway that fiery pit shall be transformed into a cool and silver lake. If drifting in the vast great ocean's foam, a man should be in danger of his life for monstrous fish or evil beings, let him only think on Kanzian's great power. At once the sea will all compassion be. If from the top of Sumeru, in Buddhism Sumeru, the mountain of the universe, a man be hurled down by an enemy's cruel hand, just let him think on Kanzian's great power, and like the sun he will remain aloft. And it goes on like this. These are awful things that can happen to people and to beings. And it goes on with quite a list of them. And in each case it says that if you think on Kanzian's great power, you could say if you take refuge in Kanzian's great power, you will be, as if by magic, released from the suffering of this situation. Well, Buddhism is not magic. Real religion is not magic. And in these situations, I don't think that you can count on a magical release from the situation. It may be that sometimes such releases do happen, but generally speaking, they don't. Sometimes you can pray all you want to, but if you're in a really messy situation, you're just going to get crunched. So I'm sorry to say that if you take this literally, very, very literally, and you get in one of these situations, you're very likely to be profoundly disappointed. Does this mean that the scripture is misleading us? Well, it could be taken that way, But it is a danger to be too literal-minded in religion. Really, in anything, it's a danger to be too literal-minded. We can take it on another level. So here's my experience. Many times I've found myself in a situation which was dangerous, scary situation. Sometimes it's not so much physically dangerous as spiritually dangerous. And many times my heart has cried out to cosmic compassion in some way. Later on in this series of talks, I'll talk more in more detail about how this is done from the point of view of a serious meditator. Right now, I'll just say, many times I've had the experience of my heart crying out to cosmic compassion. And every time this has happened, I have experienced release from suffering in that situation. This release from suffering, however, has very often not been accompanied by a relief from the particular external conditions, the pressures that are bearing upon me. Sometimes I've just had to wait until those conditions change. So clearly, you can distinguish between the release from suffering in a situation and the external conditions of that situation. And if we make that simple distinction, we liberate ourselves from the kind of shackles of a too literal interpretation of this scripture and scriptures like it, such as another scripture that I really love and that we recite a lot here at festivals, the scripture on the immeasurable life of the Tathagata, which, as I mentioned yesterday, is another scripture taken from the Lotus Sutra. This series of talks I've entitled The Power of Kanzeon, and I think it is very safe to say that that crying out of the heart, cry of the heart to cosmic compassion, and the experience of release from the miseries of the situation in which one has found oneself, that results from that cry of the heart, that is the experience of the power of Kanzeon that this scripture is talking about. So another way of putting what I'm saying here is don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Nowadays, when I recite this scripture, each one of these situations that's being described kind of lights up for me as it passes, as we go through the scripture. And it reminds me, in this situation too, if you find yourself in this situation one day, you can call out to the Eternal, you can call out to cosmic compassion, and you can trust that the help will be there for your suffering in this situation. Even if you die in this situation, you can be lifted out of suffering. You can experience transcendence of the suffering in that situation. And to me, this is the great gift of this wonderful scripture. It's saying that in each of these awful situations, you can be raised out of the mud of suffering. You can experience transcendence. Notice that I'm not saying you can transcend it. It isn't your willpower that's going to do it. You have to bring your willpower, your willingness, really. But your right exercise of the will, you have to bring that to an act of faith and refuge taking, so that two arrows are able to meet in midair, as it were. The arrow of your will and willingness and your spiritual longing, and the arrow of the compassion and grace of the Eternal. And when these two arrows meet in midair, suffering is transcended, even while our own body and mind may be severely impacted. In this way, this wonderful scripture points the way that was pointed by the Buddha himself when he taught that there is nirvana, there is the cessation of suffering. So as these talks continue, I'll talk in more detail about how this is approached from the point of view of a serious meditator.
Homage to all Buddhas and all